Hi, everybody. This is Pam coming to you from the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories. You can find this at www.stutterrockstar.wordpress.com, and it's also freely downloadable on iTunes. Tonight I'm excited because I have a guest who doesn't stutter, but who really cares about people who stutter, and she has a great story. So, hey, Jill.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. You?
Good. Good.
Can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. And I'll introduce myself the way I introduce myself at most NSA conferences, which is, hey, I'm Jill, and I don't stutter. So my name's Jill Douglas. I am, oh my gosh, entering my fourth year of the PhD program. I have my master's in speech therapy, and fourth year in the PhD program, and my focus is going to be in covert stuttering. And I live here in the South, where it's super hot right now, and I'm excited to be talking to you on your super great podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be talking to you as well. But it's kind of neat to actually be talking to somebody who doesn't stutter about stuttering, because I think that's just as important when we're talking about women who stutter. So whereabouts in the South are you?
I just realized I didn't say what state I am. I'm in Louisiana. I'm in Lafayette, Louisiana, to be exact. Not too far from the oil spill, actually. Oh. So that's always exciting. Always exciting things happening around here.
How is that affecting things there? I mean, is it obvious?
I mean, it's not like on my front doorstep, but I mean, there's just communities among communities, I mean, upon communities that are, that their community is built around the Gulf.
Right.
So it is majorly affecting our area and our culture and even just our vacation life. Like, my family vacation has been canceled. Everybody down here goes to the Gulf for vacationing to the beaches. So it's economically going to be horrendous on us. It's not good. And it's not stopping, which is just the crazy part. So it's not a light topic of conversation around here at cocktail parties to talk about the oil spill.
It's just so recent on the heels of Katrina too. That's like crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, listen, you mentioned that when you introduce yourself at NSA conferences that, you know, you say that you don't stutter. How did you get involved with the NSA if you don't stutter?
Well, during my master's program at UL Lafayette, I had a client, my second semester of the graduate program, I had a client who clutters.
Okay.
And basically, at the time, I was calling it stuttering because I knew something was going on. And stuttering was such a common, more common than cluttering. And so I wanted to get more insight on his emotional side of living with a speech disorder. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the NSA chapter meetings, which are held on UL's campus.
Oh, wow.
That was the first thing that got me there. And I honestly, I still, full circle is, I was a supervisor in our clinic last year, and that client was one of, my first client was one of the clients that I was supervising with graduate students. Does this make sense? So I was supervising him, and I was supervising the graduate students working with him.
Okay.
And I still, and like when he and I talk, I always tell him the reason that I got to this point that I'm working on my PhD in this is because of me going to that meeting for him. And so I thank him for that. Even though he was cluttering, not stuttering, it just all had a purpose.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that could have been more clearly stated in that story.
I think that's clear as mud. Well, what got you in interested in the speech field, though, initially, besides this client that was cluttering? I mean, what drew you in the first place?
Into the stuttering world or speech?
Speech generally.
Honestly, the reason I got into speech was because I always wanted to be a teacher. Mm. And my mom's a teacher, and she's always suggested for her children, us, to go further than a degree in teaching, because you can always fall back on teaching. And so, in my mind, speech therapy had more avenues, more populations to work with, and was getting a degree further than teaching would. Mm-hmm. So that's really the first reason that pops into my head, is because my mom told me so. No, because my mom suggested if I wanted to be a teacher, speech would definitely be an alley, an avenue that would be good and very similar. So,
wow.
But I've definitely veered off of that path, because now I want to work with adults. I want to work in academia. I want to research, you know, so it took me on this path. It was the instigator, though.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you're in your fourth year of your PhD program.
Yeah.
What's your goal? I mean, where do you want to go with your PhD? You want to teach? You want to teach on, like, the college level?
I do. Some days I want to teach on the college level in academia and research. Some days I think it would be neat to be a researcher for a nonprofit such as NSA, shameless plug. But basically, I want to research, and I want to be the type. I want to research in ways that will really help clinicians and clients out. So in a very grounded, user-friendly type of research is what I really want to do. And so honestly, any job that allows me to do that, that's the best way to put it.
Wow. You know, that's like kind of a cool segue into something that I really wanted to ask you, and hopefully you'll be okay with it. In my experience, and I think a lot of other people's experience that stutter, it seems like a lot of SLPs, and particularly school-based SLPs, just really don't have a lot of experience with stuttering, or are like intimidated with it. Do you find that true, and have you ever been intimidated by stuttering?
I do find it true when I'm talking to, like, a general population of SLPs, like, let's say, maybe a state conference or a national conference, the ASHA conference. I find, since stuttering is 1% of the American population, and many SLPs could tell you, you know, in their 20 years of practicing, they've come across, you know, 5 stutterers. Mm-hmm. And so in knowing those type of stats, I think it's a trickle-down effect of people not putting as much emphasis on the training for it, and just what it requires to work with a person who stutters and build confidence in talking to a person who stutters even. But so I think stuttering being, people who stutter being such a small part of the population of the clients that they see, then it is harder for them to put so much focus into it. Mm-hmm. But then I sometimes wonder, as a naysayer sometimes, I sometimes wonder how many students either A, were covert stuttering or not stuttering in the therapy room because of whatever reasons, or B, they just put like a wait and see type of mentality to these kids who came in who stuttered, and they suggested they come back in a few months and they just maybe got lost in the cracks. I wonder about that. So I wonder if their clients who stutter are small numbers because of those possible reasons. And have I ever been intimidated by the thought of having clients who stutter? Right now, definitely no. But in the past, I mean, when I had that first client who had the disfluency, the disorder of cluttering, I was scared out of my mind. I was nervous because there was so much hype amongst my classmates and I about getting a fluency client, about like the nerves and it's so hard. And I don't know. I don't even know why, because I can think of so many other types of speech issues that are so much harder to tap into to help somebody out with. But initially, yes, I was very nervous, but I had a great, great supervisor who taught me some great counseling techniques. And that is what just made me really love that area of working with an adult with the a fluency disorder. So is the whole counseling aspect. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so different from anything I've ever learned from speech, you know, about being a speech therapist. So that definitely gave me some tools that I could, you know, help me out in the future. And it definitely has.
So you said that you've made like presentations at like ASHA and stuff like that. So do you try to let like new clinicians or master level students know that when you're working with people that stutter, you really have to take a holistic approach? I mean,
No, I cut you off.
It sounds like that's what you're advocating, right?
Yes. And I kind of feel like it's my calling to plant that seed in the ear of anybody who's going to listen in this field, you know? And I just I've boiled it down to saying that just because somebody walks in the door and has 0% stuttered syllables in that time of you talking to them, you cannot base any discharge or whatever off of that, if you ask me. I always say, for a diagnosis, at least, for a diagnosis, you have to talk to the child, the adult, do some type of observing, you know, possible word switching, possible hesitations, possible avoiding situations, and talk to the parents as to why the parent even brought them in, you know, or why it's even a concern. Because you can't base it off of just the child coming into that clinic room and the 30 minutes you have with that kid. Right. It's unfair to that child, for that child's future, possibly, even as dramatic as that. But from hanging out with NSAers, it's so true. It can be that dramatic at times.
Yeah. It sounds like you have like a real in interest in like the whole covert thing, because you're using, you know, that type of language, substitution, word switching, avoidance, yada yada. I mean, does that strike a special chord with you, the covert stuff?
It does, and I think covert, like getting into this world of stuttering, I knew I'd love it because it felt like it was its own world. And so it's like, it would be endless feeling of things to think about and things to talk to people about. But it's like, of this world of stuttering, this minority of people in our world who stutter. Of that minority of people, there's another minority, you know, of covert stutterers. And it's like, who would have thought, you know, there's another minority within the minority, you know? And to know, and I just feel like not much light is being shed on covert stuttering and on the stories of people who are covert stutterers and of their journey and of how they got into that journey. And there's just so much to be learned when it comes to stuttering. And I'm finding that with covert stuttering is that I have so much to learn with it. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah. And I like the way that you said that, the minority within the minority, because of course you also know that women are in the majority of people who stutter, you know, because 4 out of 5 people of that 1% that stutter are men. So
you've
got, you know, 20% of 1%, you know, and you know, I think women, I don't know, maybe I'm just basing it on my own experience, but I wonder if women are the ones that generally tend to be more covert with their stuttering than men. Because of maybe the whole self-esteem stuff or the, you know,
social roles.
Right. Social rules or the desire to be attractive.
I am on that bandwagon with you, sister, because I also wonder, to take it even a step further or a step with it, I don't even know, that there's possibly a higher population of women who are covert stutterers, which I think that population of women are not being counted in the 4-to-1 ratio.
Right.
And so, anyway, it's 4-to-1, right? Not 3-to-1.
It's 4-to-1, yeah.
4-to-1, right.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that ratio is actually closer than 4-to-1 because of the women who just sunk into the background and who don't even know that they're covert stutterers, which... we've heard that before, you know, that story before of, I know a woman, and I think Leslie on your program had said she had just heard the term covert stutters and realized she fit it perfectly, but she never thought of herself as that before. And I know somebody who also thought people would laugh at her if she ever called herself a stutterer. She's like, because I never let myself stutter. So why would anybody believe me?
Right.
And so I wonder if that ratio of men to women is higher because of the covert stutterers amongst the women.
Yeah.
And I have nothing to back that up other than my conversations with people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's funny because, as you know, I was covert for most of my life. I started stuttering at 5 and... largely out of fear of negative social punishment, out of fear of rejection. I largely tried to keep it hidden. And just like you said, when I went to my first NSA conference 4 years ago, and it just seems amazing that it has only been 4 years.
Yeah.
In 2006, when I went to this workshop called Covert Stuttering Exposed, that's the first time I had ever heard the word. And when I heard these people up there, you know, telling this story, I was like, oh my God, that's me. Like, all of a sudden, like, I felt like I had a word to describe what I'd been trying to do all these years. But at the same time, I also had this weird feeling like I kind of sort of don't feel like I fit in because I don't stutter enough with other people that I hear, you know, stuttering, and I stutter enough to not be fluent. So it was kind of like I kind of felt caught in that like weird little, I don't know, stratosphere for a while until I really became comfortable with it. So you're right. Sometimes people hear the word covert and for the first time, suddenly they have a way to describe what they've been doing and where they've been. And it's really an overwhelming feeling to suddenly hear your story being told by somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after all those years of feeling alone. Absolutely. And possibly crazy for thinking you feel, you know, no validation for what you're going through.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, yeah, you might be onto something. That could be
something
that you could research eventually.
Listen, listeners, nobody steal that thought or else I'll know where you found it. I'll take full credit. I'm curious, what got you walking into and even just attending that covert stuttering expose?
Well, first of all, I should back up and just talk about what got me to even go to that conference. I mean, this was, you know, that was my first conference was in Long Beach, California. I live in New York. So, you know, I went, you know, 3,000 miles by myself to go to some conference that somebody had told me about. I had been to two local NSA meetings. To make a real long story short, I was fired from a job that I had held for a long time for publicly stuttering. After hadn't kept it in for a real long time, I was finally just getting tired of that, and I started coming out with you know, my real self, and it backfired at work, and you know, that's a long story, that's history, but it's also part of my history, so I do talk about it occasionally. Mm-hmm. But I went to that conference because I wanted to find out more about me. So being a newbie to the conference and being overwhelmed and, like, you know, being in California for the first time, you know, I was like a sponge. I wanted to, like, suck up everything that I could at the conference. And I did what I suppose a lot of first timers do when they go to a conference. I took the program and I looked through it and I highlighted the ones that I, you know, the workshops that I thought would mm-hmm. be in interest. And just the program description for this covert workshop, have you hidden your stuttering? Mm-hmm. You know, do you go to great lengths to pretend that you're fluent? I was like, oh my God. So, yeah, that's what made me go to that workshop. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing these people up there telling their very private stories that, again, it was my story that they were telling, but it was coming out of their mouths. Mm-hmm. And I remember just sitting there, like, my eyes welled up, and I started getting all teary, and I just felt like, oh, my God. Like, finally.
Yes. So, gosh, I can only imagine what kind of weight was lifted.
But it still wasn't easy because, you know, when I came back to New York, you know, I didn't really know what to do with that, you know.
This new identity.
Exactly. So, yeah. Did I answer your question? Like,
yeah. I was curious as to what made you just walk into that door. And so, yeah. So when you read that description, It was one of your highlighted places to go.
Yeah. I mean, I had them highlighted and starred and everything, you know, and like, yeah, it was probably a little bit anal, but I also think that people for their first time probably do that. You know, you probably get excited like, oh my God, like it's like, you know, stuttering nirvana, like this smorgasbord of stuttering things.
That is a great way to put it. Stuttering nirvana. It is. Oh my gosh. That's so funny. It's
and
true.
I wanted to suck it all up, you know, and it was after that conference that I really started going to NSA meetings locally. And then, shortly thereafter, I started therapy for the first time as an adult, and began to explore, you know, who I was and who I wanted to be as a woman who stutters. Mm-hmm. So,
I got this big machine going, and you haven't stopped since.
Yeah, well,
Always thinking.
Oh, well, you know, I kind of like when you just said, like, you know, you feel like it's a little bit of your calling. I kind of almost think that I reached the point in my journey that I also feel the same way. Like, you know, for so long I felt so ashamed of this. And now, like, I can use my stuttering and my stuttering experience for a purpose and right. to help other people. And, you know, that's very empowering. It makes me feel like I'm using this for good use.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what you mean by calling. I mean, it's definitely that feeling that you get.
And it's kind of, I mean, I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like after I was introduced to the NSA and taken in to the world of stuttering just a little, you know, got to know so many people who stutter and get to love so many people who stutter and form these friendships. Well, it's kind of like, I feel like I can't just sit around with this type of information. Like, that would be so wasteful. Like, because there's so much that needs to be done in the world of stuttering, in the research world, in the community, you know, in TV, you know, there's just so much to be advocate for. So we can't just sit around. We just have to like do.
Exactly. And if we can do, we should do. That's kind mm-hmm. of what I feel like right now. Like I can,
mm-hmm.
should, you know, I mean like, because there's some people that, you know, aren't comfortable publicly speaking up about their stuttering, and I'm okay with it.
Right. Like right.
You know, and because it might help somebody else who's still in that, you know, stuck part or that darker part of their journey, even though that sounds kind of corny. But, you know, and kind of like with you, I mean, you have this calling, you know, or, you know, just this real passion for it. So you should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take it. Now, what are you actually doing your PhD research on?
So specifically, I am going to be focusing on the transition process from covert to overt stuttering.
Okay.
So in your terms, I think, I mean, I'm going to give you credit for this term. So basically the process of coming out of the stuttering closet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And that's basically my major focus.
Mm-hmm.
That is my major focus for this paper, for the dissertation.
So have you determined or found that there really is a process that people go through?
Well, sister, I'll let you know after I'm done writing this paper. Because unfortunately, there's no research on basically almost. It's just
wow.
On any part of the process of covert stuttering.
Wow.
And after talking and analyzing some conversations that I've had with covert stutterers, you being one, that I did notice there was common themes in the journey of being covert. And so I'm not hesitating to think that there's going to be common themes in the process of coming out of the closet. I mean, I'm sure there's not a systematic way because we're all human and we all have our own experiences to live off of. But I have no doubt that there's going to be common themes that will emerge from the journey, the process of coming out.
Wow.
Honestly.
That's so exciting. Like you're going to be authoring something that other people are going to use to learn from. Wow. That's really cool.
Well, you know, some dissertations just go back on a shelf and nothing ever happens to them. So my goal would be to have this help people, like to have people read it to learn something at least, you know? So I hope so.
Yeah.
One step at a time.
Wow. Well, it definitely sounds like you're on the right path and that you're taking the right steps, because you really do have to talk to people who stutter and, you know, really, you know, have dialogues and really understand where we're coming from and not just count disfluent syllables and, you know, make diagnoses like you were saying at the start of our conversation. You really have to know the whole person. And I think if you're able to help future clinicians understand that, that's going to be wonderfully helpful, I think.
Thank you. Thank you for reinforcing that. I hope so.
Yeah. Listen,
I do.
What have people who stutter taught you? Like,
oh my gosh.
That may be
sorry. Keep going.
Well, that might be too broad of a question, but like, you know, have stutterers taught you anything that you didn't know about life or, you know,
definitely one thing. Oh, okay. So many things. One being never to judge someone, especially never to judge someone based off of their speech, whether it be disfluent, whether it be anything, whether it be slurred speech, whether it be whatever, just never to judge based on any superficial things such as speech, never to judge somebody. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I would hope that I knew that, but I know I needed some. I was probably rough around the edges, and it was fully reinforced by getting to know people that weren't your cookie cutter fluent person off the street, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So never to judge. The other thing that I have definitely learned is the power of being quiet as a listener. It's when listening to somebody, it's not ego-centered. You know, there's two people involved in a conversation, and there's two people involved if you're going to get anything from a conversation. And so the power of just being quiet and listening and giving somebody as much time as they need and not following any socially created rules of timing, of conversation timing, of turn-taking timing, letting all those socially created rules not exist in my mind. And since I've done that, I've just learned so much more and become so much closer with so many people, fluent and disfluent, you know? It's just a good life lesson to give somebody time to think and not have any time pressure. It's a major one that I've definitely learned.
Wow. I almost kind of got chills as you were saying that. No, really, because, like, you know, you just said that, you know, the power of being quiet. And that's really a powerful statement, you know, because we're in this fast-paced, you know, we take communication for granted society, and people are impatient, you know, and people are often uncomfortable with silence, you know. So for you to just say the power of being quiet, that's like so respectful of the other person.
You're right. I never thought of it with the respect word, but it's true that it does convey that. Like, I have full focus on you, not even my own thoughts. but you, what you're saying, it does show some respect for sure.
It does. It does. And that's going to make, I think that's going to help you go a long way in, you know, building that trust and that rapport with people that you're going to, you know, delve into this journey with them, you know, because it's not just mm-hmm. that you're going to be working or treating people who stutter. You're going to be entering into a relationship with us. And
right.
when there's that foundation of respectful listening and being present, that I think is going to make you a wonderful clinician. So you go, girl.
Thanks, sister. I appreciate that. And you know, I often, well, whenever I bring up to just people that I meet out here in Lafayette that my focus is stuttering, I have the generic questions of, oh, what causes it? Or I don't know, just it's some generic, how many people stutter, you know, whatever. And well, there was this one time where I met this woman. It was the wife of this man that I know. And I was telling her that I was focused on stuttering. And she told me, and this just caught me off guard because this was not a typical response. She said, I'm a preschool teacher, and one of my students is a stutterer. And she said, I just sit there and I give him all the time he needs, because who am I to say that we only are allotted so much time when talking to people? She goes, I don't want to follow those rules. Those are rules made by somebody that I don't want to follow. And I was like, I am so glad you get it. I was like, that caught me so off guard, but you get it, girl. Like, that is awesome that she's just like, she's trying to like rebel against those rules because she knows they're not right.
Right.
And I'm like, yes.
But not only that, I mean, she's the type of person that we want teaching our children, you know?
Yeah.
She's the type of person that we want. I mean, that is going to be patient and is going to take the time and that, you know, is not going to rush through whatever because she was told she has to. That's just, wow. I'm glad you shared that. I'm glad she shared that with you. That's really cool.
And I loved it because this is a preschool teacher. This isn't
right.
an SLP. This isn't somebody in the NSA, you know. This is just somebody who took life lessons and put it to use, you know, in a, such a positive, open-minded way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Wow. Hey, listen, real quick, because we need to wind down. I heard you're going to Oslo, Norway.
Yeah.
What's up with that? What's that all about?
It's an international conference. It's going to be mostly linguists there, so I will definitely be in a minority presenting on stuttering. But
wait! You're presenting.
I think you kind of cracked out a little.
Oh, all right.
Yes, I am. Or maybe it was a block, one or the other. I'm not sure. But I really think
full and say, yeah, I didn't crack out. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm presenting a poster presentation. So it's going to be much more intimate of like people coming up to me and reading my presentation. But it's actually going to be the preliminary results about the journey of covert stuttering, the one that I presented at ASHA, actually. I'm going to be able to present at this international conference.
How did that even come to be that you're, how did you get chosen or selected to do that?
You're making it sound so great.
What country? I mean, that's so cool.
It is cool. I applied. You have to apply. You have to send in an abstract and hope it gets chosen. And so it goes before it's reviewed by their committee, and things are chosen and things are not chosen, and mine was chosen. So it was a really high honor to be accepted.
Yeah.
I mean, I always feel like I'm just starting in this program. You know, I'm not worthy of this kind of stuff, but it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm it's baby steps to put myself out there and put my research out there and my interest to say that I'm on to something. I'm you know, this is good stuff. I like it. Everybody else should like it, you know.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Wow. Well, congratulations, and you'll definitely
thank you.
Let me know how that goes, and we'll be seeing each other because you're going to the Friends conference in Chicago, right?
I will be, and I have to say, I'm not going to be going to NSA this year due to it being back to back with Oslo. And so I definitely, NSA is always on my summer list of places to go and things to do. But this year I'm excited. I'm going to be able to go to Friends.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to that group because they are just so fun.
Yeah.
And it's so impactful working with the families.
Yeah, it definitely.
I think.
Well, the families and the children and all the people that are going to get to work with you are going to be really lucky.
Oh, thanks.
And thank you, Jill, for sharing your story with us. This was really awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really, I feel honored that you asked me and wanted to be on, even though I'm not a person who stutters. So I really appreciate it.
Well,
really
hey,
do.
Hey, this has been a great, 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 great story. And so, of course, this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.